Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, July 2nd. I'm Taylor Heckert. After a year and a half of renovations, the U.S. Forest Service has finished a $12 million remodel of its district office in downtown Petersburg. The largely concrete facility is over 50 years old and is a designated historic building. Richard Burke is a Forest Service engineer who worked on the remodeling project, and he says that meant there were some limitations on what they could do.
So it is historic. It's historically ugly. So part of the project, we couldn't really do much with the outside or to improve the looks of the building. We're stuck with it. But yeah. On the inside, we did a full gut. And it looks totally different.
Because of the building's age, the agency had to pay for some big safety improvements.
We had close to $900,000 of hazardous abatements, asbestos removal. There was asbestos all over in this place.
They also improved the building's ventilation system. During the remodel, staff were based out of a smaller federal building in Scout Bay, a few miles from town. Now back downtown, about 40 people are working in the remodeled building, says District Ranger Kerry Case. That includes the 12 Forest Service employees for the Petersburg District and federal employees working for different agencies or other Forest Service districts. There are over 50 new and improved spaces to work. The building also has an improved lobby, a ready room for outdoor gear, and a lactation room. Case says many employees have children, and it's been nice to have an office space welcoming to kids.
Kids can walk here after school and, you know, go with their parents, and it's nice to have that again.
Case says there are plans to clean and power wash the outside of the building. They will also be installing a Forest Service sign. An eye care clinic in Ketchikan is now offering the first-of-its-kind laser procedure for southern Southeast Alaska. The service means that local patients no longer have to travel to urban hubs to receive care. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, it's the first step in growing eye care treatment in the region.
What you're hearing is the sound of a laser zapping a lens capsule, or the thin membrane that surrounds the eye's natural lens. The operation, known as a capsulotomy, is often performed after cataract surgery when scar tissue makes a person's vision blurry. It's one of two minimally invasive procedures that are new to the Ketchikan Eye Care Clinic. Eye doctor Joseph Johnson purchased the practice last fall.
Really, my goal since doing so has been to bring in services to Ketchikan to keep people from having to travel so far for eye care services. And so that's the overarching theme and goal of everything that I'm doing.
Like other Southeast communities, Ketchikan is on an island and has limited eye care services. Patients often have to fly to Anchorage or Seattle to receive specialized services. Johnson says the first step in expanding his clinic services was buying the laser. In addition to capsulotomies, it can also be used for laser trabeculoplasties, which can prevent glaucoma by reducing pressure inside the eye. Both procedures are painless and can be done in just a few minutes. The laser was brought to Ketchikan in January, and so far has been used on about 60 patients. And not all of them live in Ketchikan. Johnson says some have come as far as Prince of Wales Island or Wrangell to undergo an operation. Johnson says the laser saved a recent patient of his from going blind. He says she no longer wanted to travel long distances for eye care.
We got the laser done for her, and now she's back to seeing 20/20, and she's just so grateful. That's so incredibly rewarding to me. That's everything that I wanted to have in purchasing this practice.
Eugene O'Brien of Ketchikan has undergone capsulotomies in both eyes at the clinic. He says his vision was starting to fog, and he was amazed there was a local option to treat it. He says prep for the procedure took longer than the operation itself.
Suddenly everything, the whole world was brighter. That tissue that was forming around the lens, the artificial lens, had been zapped away.
O'Brien says given the size of the region, he wonders why the laser technology didn't come to Ketchikan sooner. He hopes the city can become a medical hub for other Southeast communities. O'Brien says that could cut down travel expenses for patients.
So I think this kind of service is a good thing for this community, having not to have that kind of cost, and insurance companies are probably going to love the heck out of that, not having to pay for all that kind of stuff, and we were thankful about that.
Johnson hopes to expand his clinic to offer other services too. He's looking to onboard a doctor who can perform eye injections for diseases like macular degeneration. He says that could happen later this year. Johnson also hopes to bring cataract surgery back to Ketchikan. He says it hasn't been offered locally in over 5 years.
I'm very excited about what the future has to hold. I'm fired up about it. Just hang on for the ride.
Johnson says the clinic is working to expand what insurances they take. He says the only other eye care clinic in town is only open part-time. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
A group of Alaska Native organizations is launching a new rural veterinary public health program this month to provide care for animals in dozens of villages across the state. As Eliota Niden with the Alaska Desk reports, that includes rabies vaccinations, testing for infectious diseases, as well as spaying and neutering.
Mike Williams is a musher and the chief of the village of Akiak in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region. He says he and other Alaska Native leaders for years have been advocating for more veterinary care in villages like his.
In recent times in Akiak, there were two rabid foxes shot this past winter, and there are many loose dogs. I think the main need is vaccinations with rabies and parvo that kills a lot of our animals.
The Alaska Federation of Natives' new program is in partnership with the nonprofit Alaska Native Rural Veterinary. The two-year initiative will bring veterinary services to 80 villages, according to a press release AFN shared last week. Williams is an advisor for the program. Arlie Reynolds is a former musher and the medical director for Alaska Native Rural Veterinary, which brings free vet services to villages. He says rabies is endemic in northern and western Alaska, and up to 25 people are exposed to the virus each year. The exposure usually happens when rabid wildlife, like foxes, bite village dogs.
Dogs have been part of life in rural Alaska since people have been in rural Alaska. When something that has always been a huge benefit to a society becomes a potential threat, it's really a problem. It disrupts the whole foundations of that society or culture.
Reynolds says it's difficult to access veterinary care in villages off the road system, and traveling to get care is costly and sometimes leaves villages without valued professionals for long stretches of time. Reynolds says that additionally, some parts of Alaska experience 7 times the national average of reported cases of children bitten by dogs. He says he hopes the new initiative can help address both of these issues.
This program actually will save, most importantly, it'll save trauma on people and dogs, but it'll also save communities and health providing organizations an incredible amount of money.
Taking care of pets in villages can also help protect subsistence resources, Reynolds says. One example is vaccinating against distemper that's contagious and fatal to wildlife like seals that many Alaska Native communities hunt. In the past decade, tribes have passed several resolutions at AFN conventions to support improvements to veterinary care. Last year, Senator Lisa Murkowski co-sponsored a bill to get vet care paid by the Indian Health Service. Representative Nick Begich also introduced legislation to improve access to vet services for tribes. The authors of the new program say they hope it will act as a bridge on the path toward permanent and sustainable veterinary care for tribes. In Anchorage, I am Alona Niden.
A deep-sea whale, rarely seen in southeast Alaska, washed up on shore near Sitka in early June. The goose-beaked whale was found by a group of Sitkins who were camping at a U.S. Forest Service cabin on Kruzoff Island. KCAW's Hope McKinney reports.
Ellie Schmidt and a few of her friends were camping at Fred's Creek Cabin in early June. On a rainy Saturday morning at low tide, they took a walk on the beach.
And we came across a weird object, which I thought was part of a boat. She thought maybe it was a very weirdly colored log, like it was very white and gleaming.
As they got closer, they realized it was a whale. Closer still, a very unusual one.
To me, it was the weirdest whale I've ever seen. It had the shape of a dolphin, but it was so much bigger than a dolphin, and it was really striking.
The whale was about 20 feet long, but it wasn't just one. Schmidt says they also saw a fetus protruding from the adult whale's body. So they tied the mother up on the beach, anchoring her body to drifted logs, and they called NOAA's Regional Marine Mammal Stranding Coordinators, who asked them to remove the fetus and take it back to Sitka on their 8-foot dinghy.
And so we basically, you know, found whatever gloves we had around, whatever sharp things we had around, and then carefully cut open the whale and then put this beautiful whale fetus into a cooler. We estimated it was 150 pounds, around 6 feet long, and very beautiful. And then put the cooler in the boat and brought it back to town.
Whale biologist Lauren Wild met them at the dock, put the whale fetus into a body bag, and put it in the freezer at the local University of Alaska Southeast campus.
And then it sort of became, should we go out and do a necropsy on the mom? Is there information we can find out?
Goose-beaked whales are found in deep offshore waters in most oceans and seas worldwide, but their migration patterns still aren't known. They're the deepest and longest diving mammal in the world, capable of diving at least 3,300 feet for 20 to 40 minutes to feed on cephalopods like squid and octopus.
It's sort of a very unusual thing for a beaked whale to wash up because they live offshore, and they're deep divers. And so for it to have somehow floated in, you know, the currents must be quite interesting there for it to have gotten into that cove.
Beaked whales use echolocation for navigation and foraging and are particularly sensitive to underwater sounds.
They're also typically the species of whale that is associated with Navy sonar. So when you hear about mass strandings, often those have been beaked whales.
The Kruzoff stranding wasn't the only one this summer. A second beaked whale was found beached in Yakutat in early June. Wild says this is rare. Previously, only two were reported in the area in the past 40 years.
It's cool to get a specimen wash up dead because you can kind of poke into it a little bit more and learn more about it.
Wild put a small response team together and returned to the stranding site 2 days later to perform a partial necropsy, or animal autopsy, on the mother. Wild says they were able to retrieve the head, get skin and blubber samples for genetics and hormone testing, and fecal samples to test for harmful algal blooms. They also looked in her stomach, which was full of squid beaks, meaning she likely didn't starve to death.
We weren't able to sort of definitively say what the cause of death was, unfortunately, and because the carcass was just too far, it was in kind of a moderate decomposition stage, we weren't really able to get all the things that we would want to get that might help us understand cause of death.
Wild says if the whale had been more intact, they would have investigated the whale's brain to look for signs of barotrauma, widely known as the bends, from coming back up to the surface too quickly. They also would have wanted to look at her bones, blubber, and muscle for any signs of blunt force trauma that could have contributed to her death.
Every piece of a whale is a puzzle piece to sort of put together what its life looked like. And I can't say right now that we'll never know, but we'll see.
They brought the whale's head back to town with them to freeze and use for education purposes in the future. Wild says while she had hoped they could retrieve more, she's grateful they got the opportunity to do the necropsy at all.
Beaked whales are so poorly understood, exactly what they're doing and what they're eating and all the different kind of life history parameters that are so difficult to study on these, like, really seldom seen offshore deep diving species. But I mostly just think it's a cool experience to have been able to get what we did.
Wild says they scanned the fetus at the local hospital on June 25th. And she says they plan to perform a public necropsy on the fetus at Whale Fest this fall, which could shed light on what caused them to wash ashore on a remote Southeast Alaska island. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
For Canvas K, I'm Taylor Heckert.